Just be really, really good and great things will happen to you, but just be present and give to other people.
Today on the Rising Coaches podcast, we get the pleasure to speak with one of the founding fathers of Rising Coaches, while also being a member and the current assistant coach at Siena College, Coach Andy Farrell. Coach Farrell has a ton of basketball knowledge for us as he has been at various positions, including Virginia Commonwealth University, where he started his coaching career, also including Clemson DePaul University, Longwood University, Southwest Mississippi Community College, Dayton Flyers, and where he currently stands, Siena College. Everyone, please welcome Coach Andy Farrell.
Video analysis is expensive and your budget probably isn't getting much bigger. Fulcrum Tech is here to help. Used by basketball teams at all levels from Division I all the way to high school, their Angles product is very similar to what you know and allows you to code, capture, and analyze with ease. All you have to do is import the raw video in Synergy with just the click of a mouse. Over the past 2 years, over 60% of Division I teams in conferences such as the SEC, Pac-12, American, NBC, and A-10, just to name a few, have made the postseason, all while using Fulcrum Tech and saving thousands and thousands of dollars compared to their old companies. Reach out to Fulcrum Tech on X at Fulcrum Tech or their sales at sales@fulcrumtech.com. Just shoot them over an email and be sure to mention if you are a Rising Coaches member. Do more, spend less with Fulcrum Tech. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Rising Coaches podcast. You have Doug Caputo and Alan Major here. And today we have ourselves a current member of Rising Coaches on top of one of the co-founders of Rising Coaches, as well as an assistant coach at Siena College, Coach Andy Farrell. Coach Farrell, what's going on?
What's going on, guys? I think that's probably the longest title introduction on the podcast so far.
You get all that on a business card, you're getting it done, man.
It's just a QR code at this point. Like, it's just, hey.
Yeah, no question.
Of course, you know, there's a lot of things that we can definitely talk about with you, one of which being, as we mentioned, you're at Siena College. So just to give everyone, I already kind of gave a brief download in the introduction before, but Virginia Commonwealth, Clemson, DePaul, Longwood University, Southwest Mississippi, Dayton, and Siena, right? Yeah. And then there's all like in that order, starting from Virginia all the way up to Siena. But the main reason I say all that is because it's been 15 plus years of coaching, right? Yeah. College basketball, and majority of those seasons being at the Division I level. Just talk about one, I mean, starting from your first position and working your way up and then, you know, being in Siena and give us kind of the briefing there.
Yeah. So I actually started as a student manager at the University of Dayton, became a manager, tried to walk on at Dayton, didn't make it. But the head coach, Brian Gregory at the time, came up to me and was like, hey, I can see you love the game. You're not good enough to be a walk on, but do you want to be a student manager? And I thought that that was a unique opportunity to stay involved with the game. I'd been coaching on the fourth grade AAU team at the time, and I really, really liked it. I was like, hey, it's a way to stay involved with the game. And after my first practice, I fell in love with it. Just to see how the coach's energy, their interactions, being able to be like this as a profession, to be a coach, I was going to be all in at that time. So after my first practice, I met with the coach. And I was like, hey, like, this is what I want to do as a freshman in college. Like, what do I need to study? How often do I need to work? Like, what do I need to do in order to really grow in this business? And they gave me a ton of video responsibilities, mail out responsibilities, recruiting databases, driving coaches to watch games and recruit. And I became engulfed in what it was as a freshman manager, in addition to like the passion and the love of the game, the X and O's, the relationships with the players and all that. So as I was a manager, I kind of learned all those things from a very early age and then worked at VCU, Clemson, DePaul, all those places that you just said. And what's funny in this profession, I think too many people think that it's a linear profession, like it's going to be this step and this step and this step. And that's kind of what I thought at the beginning, too, until I realized like so much of this is out of your control. And as soon as you figured out of what your next step is, you're going to get humbled very quickly because it's a linear profession. It's not, hey, you've got to be a manager, then a graduate assistant, then a special assistant, director of operations, assistant coach, associate head coach. Like it's sometimes it's luck. Sometimes it's just chance. But the things that I learned very, very early was it's the people that you work with and it's the people that you're coaching, like the young men or women that you're coaching. Like, it's all about the people. And if you think for a second it's not about the people, then you're probably doing something wrong.
Yeah, no, I love that, man. You know, we try to throw this out all the time, and Doug's probably sick of me saying it, but, like, you know, the three magic words are like, whatever it takes. And I followed the same path you did. So, like, that resonates with me when you said that. I tried to walk on at Purdue. Good luck. They were in the top 25. They didn't need me, you know. And so same thing. Went back to the staff the next day, and just, you know, you go from a walk on to next day filling Gatorades. It's like, that's how fast it can change.
Yep.
But my high school coach had always said, man, like, hey, leave your pride in your dorm. Don't worry about it. Just do whatever you got to do to climb up into the belly of the beast. And so
no doubt.
I love the fact that you say that, because it's so important, as you already know through this platform, that guys just be willing to throw themselves into a situation and not try to calculate what's on the other side of it.
Yes.
So many guys want to say, well, I'll do this if dot, dot, dot.
Yes.
As opposed to, like, I'll do this, period.
Yep.
No dots, you know. And so by you just kind of throwing that whatever it takes mentality that you had, like, that resonates so much with what we're continuing, I'll say, with you being here, continuing to try to do with what you guys have already established with this platform. Those are three big words.
Oh, no doubt. And I think that's so many young coaches ask for, like, advice. Like, hey, you know, what should I do? It's like, whatever it takes. Like, if you want to be in this profession, are you willing to take a, you know, a Division III volunteer spot? Do you want to coach and live in the dorms at a prep school? It's like, what are the, you know, everyone wants to be, you know, the head coach at a Blue Blood, right? Like, you know, or an
right.
coach at Blue right. Blood. That's like, what are you willing to do? And if the answer is whatever it takes, then do whatever it takes. And then while you're there, do whatever it takes. Talks about, like, being where your feet are, and it's so true, because until you can be, just like we tell our players, be a star in your role, and then you can get more responsibilities. And if you can truly embrace that, man, some really good things happen. And it's just, it's how this business works, it's how the profession works, it's how life works. Just be really, really good, and great things will happen to you. But just be present and give to other people.
That's well said, perfectly well said. And I mean, one of the things too, I even just had a conversation with my coach the other day. I was like, listen, I know, like, there's always things you got to improve on. I'm the type of person, I know I talk with Al all the time, like, you got to find something to improve on. And I was talking with him. I was like, I'm going to improve on this for next year. So, like, to better help you know, little things. And even if it's just that's the one thing I love the most, is I actually take pride. And I don't know if it's just me, but, like, take pride in doing those little things. And it's like getting the Slipknot ready before we leave, making sure we don't leave that behind before
yes.
game. Because one game, it took me one game. And I tell you what, I learned, sometimes you learn the best from getting that one game. He goes, where's the Slipknot? I'm like, oh.
Whoops.
Yep. Because I ended up taking a step up. But anyway, my point is, like, the little things like that start to just click in your head. So they definitely go a long way. But kind of going back to, you were, if I'm not mistaken, one of three brothers who worked at Dayton with the basketball
yeah.
program.
Yep.
You went on, as you mentioned, tried to walk on, became a manager. Your brother, Matt, I believe, worked on Brian Gregory's staff, and your twin brother, Eric, worked for Gregory and on Archie Miller's staff, who Archie we actually had on here at one point. Just talk about the convenience, being able to have family and blood all, you know, working in the same place.
Basketball mafia right there, man.
Yeah, right.
End up in the river. Don't cross these guys. You end up in the river, man.
No doubt. So it's funny, because being born and raised in Dayton, Ohio, like, Dayton is a basketball community, and it's very, very special, and it's one of the best in the entire country. And the fan base is unbelievable. And growing up, going to Dayton game, my first Dayton game when I was 3 months old, my mom and dad went to the University of Dayton. I think I was the 14th or 15th person to graduate from the University of Dayton in my family. So, like, it was always a special place as a university. But then you tie the basketball into it, and you tie the community into it. So I had some Division II and Division III opportunities to play, but I decided, hey, I want to try to walk on a Dayton, just because Dayton was always in my blood. And then when I became a student manager, that kind of opened the doors for my family to be integrated with the Dayton basketball community, not just, like, going to games and being fans and things like that, but being a student manager. And then my senior year rolls around, and my brothers both coach, like, youth AAU teams, and they were kind of doing their own things as well, and high school teams, but never collegiately, but they would always come and work our camps. So all the coaches on the Dayton staff got to know me very, very well, and they got to know my brothers. Well, senior year rolls around, and Brian Gregory and then Billy Schmidt bring me in their office. I thought I was in trouble because usually they're getting on me.
Especially with two guys waiting on you. You're like, uh-oh.
I usually got an earful from them, but those guys always looked after me. But they held me accountable. But they asked me, they said, Andy, we have a graduate assistant open on the staff. Would you be fine if we talked to your brother Matt about it? And I thought it was so awesome that they had so much respect for me that they just asked my permission for it. And I was just like, oh, that'd be great. Like, sure. So when they interviewed my older brother for it, they offered him the job. He accepted it. So my older brother became the graduate assistant while I was a student manager. And then our director of operations left. He got bumped up. The GA position opened up. They offered it to me. I actually turned it down to go work at VCU because I wanted to just take a chance. I wanted to get out there and I knew that my heart was always going to be in Dayton in some capacity, but I needed to go out, especially as a young coach, to just take a chance, take a risk and explore my network. But when I turned it down, then they offered the GA position to my twin brother. So both of the brothers started working on the staff. And then right when Brian Gregory left to go to Georgia Tech, my older brother was looking to get out of the profession anyways. Archie comes in and he wanted to retain my twin brother because he knew everything about Dayton. Not just like, hey, who, you know, what are the players or like, how do I open this door? But like, you know, all the classes, you know, all the professors, you know, what the community does, you know, who the donors are. Like you're able to connect all the dots for the brand new staff. And Archie became just an unbelievable friend of our family as well. And Archie's always been very supportive of me, even though I've never worked directly with Arch too, just through my family connections with Dayton. It's just a small world, but it has been a lot of fun for the past 21 years, 19 of them. And this is one of the 2 years that someone from my family hasn't been on staff at the University of Dayton.
That's great. That's great. I mean, especially just all the blood, you know, all the family being tossed around in the basketball industry and everything. It's great to be able to just see. And it just says right there, as much as we preach on it, relationships and knowing people can help you out in the long haul. And then we talked about kind of going back to like the full journey. I know we mentioned all the schools that you have been with, but so far, like if you had to say just overall being at Siena, what are the top three things that have necessarily maybe helped you get to where you are now? If you could narrow down to three, like any position you were at, anything, is there any three things that stand out to you?
Yeah, I would say one is relationships, right? Like relationships are so important, and it's not just, oh, networking, passing out business cards, and you're just checking boxes. It's developing like genuine relationships. And that's what Rising Coaches like really started as. And funny enough, like how I got to Siena in a longer route is because of Rising Coaches. So when our head coach, Carm, when he first got the head job here at Siena, a mutual friend of ours reached out to me and said, hey, you guys have the Rising Coaches Conference this upcoming summer. Carm just got hired as head coach. Would you want him to speak? He'd be willing to do it. He's going to be down there. He would love to speak and just talk about, hey, first year head coach, who he hired, why he hired, program standards, this, that, and the other. I was like, yeah, like nobody. I knew of Carm, but we didn't know each other. So Carm came out and spoke. And from there, we just developed a genuine relationship that started 6 years ago, right? Like it's not something that was like, hey, 6 weeks before the interview. It was six years ago. And you never know where it went, but like I was enamored with like how structured he was and how disciplined and how he knew exactly how he wanted the program to be run. And we just built that relationship. Like I was always impressed with him. And then we just kept connecting. We'd help each other out with scouting reports or transfers, or we'd see each other on the road recruiting or whatever it was. And it was just always a genuine relationship that over the course of time became a friendship. So I think relationships is really, really important. And that's how I was able to start 6 years prior to even being interviewed for the job, just from a genuine relationship that was authentic. So one is relationships really, really matter. I think the second thing is exactly what you talked about before, Alan, is whatever it takes, like just do the job. Like there are, whether I was a student manager, when I was, you know, at Clemson, you know, at an ACC school, when I was in a junior college in Mississippi, there's always jobs that people don't want to do. And someone just get it done. And it's for the good of the program. So whether it's grabbing the slipknot, the stools, class checks, you know, driving 3 hours to get a DVD to exchange with, you know, and we don't have to do that
anymore. Right.
But whatever it takes. And if you just do that, you become a reliable individual. So if you can handle the small things, you can handle the big things. Anthony Grant used to always, always say, and I truly believe this, how you do anything is how you do everything. How you do anything is how you do everything. And like, if that can just be the motto of who I am as a man, as a father, as a husband, as a coach, as a mentor, as an, like whatever it may be, like I think that would be, those words would be what I stick to, because if I'm genuine and I'm authentic and I get stuff done in detail-oriented manner and people can rely on me, then they're going to allow me to have other responsibilities. So relationships, how you do anything is how you do everything. And then I would just say, like, be open, right? Like, be open for opportunities, be open to new ideas, because there's, in this thing, in this profession, like, there's not one way to do everything, right? Like, there's so many different ways: zone, press, man, triangle two, box and one, transition, you know, press, like, whatever it is, there's so many different ways of doing it. So just be open to it, like, be receptive to it. You may have some really, really good ideas and they may work, but at the same time, this game is constantly changing too. You look 25 years ago, you know, whenever the shot clock was first put in, 35 years ago, and now it's the 3-point line. Well, what is the next evolution? Like, what are those things that are happening next? And if we're so stuck in our ways, then we're not going to be able to take advantage of those new opportunities. One thing that's coming to light right now is analytics. Like, I'm all in on analytics. Like, I think analytics is really, really strong and powerful. Is it the 100% answer all the time? No, because you're working with people, right? Like, you're working with young men and women. So, but like, analytics is a massive component where, hey, if you want to structure your offensive and defensive identity around that, and then realize you've got to put those people in those places, that could be a really strong advantage. So just to recap, I would say relationships, how you do anything is how you do everything. And then just be open for new ideas and new opportunities.
And saying, you said evolution, I was thinking about this as soon as you said that too. With people, you know, spewing out like Wembanyama now, they're going to have to be raising the hoop, if anything. And then that's going to completely turn some heads. Like, it's going to, you know, I just saw a video of him. He's going up and blocking somebody underneath the rim, didn't even leave his feet. You know, and those are grown men that he's making look like, 10-year-old children.
The best in the world.
Yeah. But then kind of going off of that, you talk on your analytics, you talk on really just everything as a whole. So like, how much of your coaching tendencies, because everybody, I mean, at least from what I hear and what I understand, is coaches steal other coaches' ideas. They steal their plays. They steal their, you know, just tendencies, all of that. So how many of your tendencies do you think, is there anything specific to you that maybe is unique? Or do you just feel like you are more of a sponge to all the other coaches that you've been around?
Yeah, I'm definitely not unique. I think I'm a sponge. Not just
we all are.
Yeah, yeah, and I think I'm just a sponge to all the coaches that I've worked with. But at the same time, like, some of my favorite things that I have in, like, kind of my arsenal that I keep in, like, my folders and stuff that I would love to do is stuff that I've taken from teams I've scouted. Right? Like, you see some stuff, you're like, oh, those are really cool wrinkles, or those are really great things at play. Like, I think that my identity over the course of time has developed from everybody, whether it's, you know, the stuff that Brian Gregory does and the different sets and his attention to detail from the Michigan State and Izzo tree, with like how specific, like the angles of screen matter, the pace and the timing all matters. That's really good. I love the pressure stuff that I learned from both Anthony Grant and Oliver Pinnell. Was like, hey, can you speed teams up? Can you make them uncomfortable? The old Bill Belichick way of like, can you make somebody play left-handed? Like, that stuff is really, really important. I learned a lot of culture stuff at the junior college level about how I value the character and those things that we just put a premium on and end up winning us championships because of the young men that we recruited and how we poured into them. So you just take things from so many different people, but then from a basketball standpoint, a lot of it's just like what I've just seen when I'm just watching games, or when I'm really diving in and watching 15 games of a team that I'm scouting.
Yeah, I think I actually think it does make you unique, Andy, in the sense that we're all a function of the people that have kind of influenced us, right? Like, you know, you want to make a bowl of chili, you got a pinch of this, dash of that, cup of this, whatever it is, but like how it tastes is all you.
Yeah.
Right. Because what you do with all those different things kind of creates a unique approach that you do have. And I mean, thank God for all the people that have poured into us. Right. Because we we wouldn't be where we are. But that's the beauty of this profession is that, and I think to add to that, it's so important in this platform, especially we just try to stress to guys, like, be, you know, just be relentless learners. Like, don't ever get to a point, like, if you achieve a, get to a certain level, like you're an assistant in the Big Ten or whatever, like, oh, I'm good. It's like, oh, no, you're not. Yeah. Like, you got to keep, you know, you've got to stay hungry. You've got to be a lifelong learner and keep, like you said, just keep adjusting. Like analytics, we had Adam Bauman from Alabama on here, you know, a couple weeks ago. And, you know, that's kind of what he does at Alabama. And, but you're right. Like, even that, like, use it as a tool. It's not always maybe a solution, but it's a tool because you are dealing with people. So it can't, they can't, analytics can't rule the room, but they can influence the room.
No doubt. And it can influence like your foundation for which you, you do things. When we were starting our analytics program at Dayton, I went and I met with people from the Cincinnati Reds, Cincinnati Bengals, a lot of other, you know, professional organizations that like, and I just literally was like, all right, tell me, how did you guys start your analytics? Right. Like, and that was one of the things that they said. It's like, hey, listen, like, this is going to be a tool, but you're dealing with people, you're dealing with individuals, you're dealing with, you know, trends or family issues or this, that, and the other, and the ever-changing rules and regulation of the game and the new prospects. But what I took from that is a quote I say often is like, analytics is really, really good, but like your job as a coach is to use numbers and turn them into data, data into information, and then information into teaching. Like that's the role of analytics as a coach. You take numbers and you turn it into data, data into information, information into teaching. And if you can then do that in ways that your players can understand, then you're using analytics properly. But if at some point you miss something along those lines, then it's just going to be the paralysis by analysis. Like it's just going to be too much, or you're missing something. Because at the end of the day, numbers are only as good as how the players receive it as you're coaching.
No question. No doubt.
That is great. And especially, I mean, like plus minuses, everybody listens and reads those, right? You look into them, but then say someone checks in for 1 minute and the guy on the other side gets back door cut. Like his plus minus just dropped because, and then they go down and take a bad shot and then come right back. Same guy gets back door cut. Like that guy's plus minus is going to be -4 right now, but at the same point. So, I mean,
that's 100%. I was just talking with the coach the other day and I said, that's the thing sometimes you have to be leery of with analytics because you do have to still like watch the game and understand it. Because if all of a sudden I told you right now, man, the first 4 minutes of the game, we gave up 50% of the offensive rebounds, like on the defense end, the other team got 50% of the rebounds. You're like, man, your defense sucks right now. We forced 5 turnovers. They took 2 shots. Right? Like, so like, let's look at the quality of everything. It was like, hey, they missed 2 shots. They got 1 back, but then they turned it over 5 other times. Our defense is pretty solid. It's just, what is the sample size? So you always have to take everything with a grain of salt. But that's why I do love analytics, because sometimes it does uncover some of those trends and some of that information that you may not just see with your own eyes.
Yeah, no doubt. No, I love that, man. Because the two things that can't ever get lost is context and people, right? Because if context gets lost, that's a big deal. And then, like you said, the information is ultimately coming back to serve the people that you're working with. But if the numbers get so focused that the context gets lost and the people get lost, it's like, well, what are we doing, right? Like you kind of miss. That's how you miss the whole boat right there. When those two things, you know, get too clouded, then you can't really see the forest for the trees. But context is such a big deal, and I think, you know, I think analytics can support your feel, but you can't use analytics sometimes to the detriment of your feel. Like you still have to, there's a reason why you get that gut feeling 2 minutes left to go, you know, all right, we haven't blitzed the whole game, but you know, this dude's just come off 3 pick and rolls and hit 2 runners in a pull up 3. Like, wait a minute, you know, like, yeah, my gut says we need to blitz this dude just right here, right now, make him do something else.
Al, what's funny about like, and you say that about like your gut, it is your gut, but your gut feeling is created because of so many data points that you have in the past that may not be an actual number, but it's still data. It's not like quantifiable, but it's like qualifiable, like if that's even.
Oh, for sure. Applicable.
That's meeting that gut. And it may be subconsciously that it's that your gut feeling, but it's still data points. But like, that's why this game is so beautiful, right? Like, And I'm telling you, Doug, you ask where I get stuff from. Like, I'm stealing something from Alan, and I'll cite my source, but the context and people, I think that that's great, because it is like the context and people cannot be overlooked when it comes to coaching in general, but like, especially with like the analytics.
I guess the final thing that I really had, because you already talked about kind of rising coaches for the most part, so we won't even, and I'm sure you might even be a little,
I could talk for hours. I wouldn't let that happen. I could talk for hours.
But just especially as we mentioned, all the different roles that you've been in, but primarily just being as an assistant now, like, what is your definition, if you had one, of being the best assistant to your head coach?
Really, really good question. I would say the word has got to be serve. Like, you have to have a servant's heart and you have to serve. And I think part of being good at serving is, one, you've got to be able to humble yourself, because in order to like serve the best, you have to release yourself. That's all about humility. So if my heart is pure and I've humbled myself and I know who I am enough and I have enough confidence in who I am as a man, as a father, as a husband, as a coach, like, I have no problem serving others. So if you can serve, what does that look like? Whatever the head coach needs is what you have to do. Again, like, whatever it takes, but ultimately, like, we are serving the student athletes within our program, and we are serving the university or college that we work for. Like, I have to represent the Sienna brand and college everywhere I go, because right, wrong, or indifferent, if I walk in the grocery store, someone may recognize me. So I have to make sure that I'm serving this brand to the best of my ability. And that's why they have hired me, in addition to coaching the game. I need to serve my head coach, because he's the one that hired me. And ultimately, he's the captain of the ship. The ship is the college. He is the captain and he's steering it. And then I have to serve our players, because our players are ultimately like that. That's my why. Like, my why as a coach is to use the game of basketball to teach life lessons to young men. Like, that is why I coach. So like, if I can serve these young men through this awesome game of basketball, where they're becoming better basketball players, they're becoming better versions of themselves on the court, but ultimately it's the off the court. Can I use the life lessons of discipline, hard work, commitment, accountability, responsibility, whatever those things are, where, hey, listen, like, touching the line matters. It may not matter for a conditioning standpoint. It doesn't matter from a conditioning standpoint, but do you have the discipline and do you have the drive to just touch that line? Because that's what's being required. And can we use these life lessons to then serve these young men so that they can be successful 40 years down the line, 4 days from now, like, whenever it is. So I think to become a really, really good assistant coach, and I'm striving every single day to continue to improve myself, but I think you have to serve. You have to be able to serve.
And I'm glad you said that about touching the line. That's one thing that I, as a player, when I, you know, I was like, it's not that big of a deal. But now, like, once you actually fully understand it, it completely, to your point, it's a huge deal. It says a lot about who you are. You know, you're ready to cut corners, or when you have to run in gym class, you had to run laps around the gym floor, but instead of running fully around the out of bounds, you know, you cut the corner. You know exactly. Everybody did it. But it's just one of those things that says. It speaks volume. So I'm happy you said that.
No, what guys eventually realize, and it's cool when, you know, you've coached enough now where guys come back, right? And whether it's they become husbands, fathers, they go from boys to men, you know, like, they start to realize what touching a line really means. Like, touching a line is that presentation's got to be done for this company, you know, for this meeting. You know, that's ironically got called on a Saturday morning at 8 a.m., but that's unconventional. But you got to touch the line to make sure that gets done. You got to touch the line so you tuck your kid in at night, because the kid's counting on story time. And you can't get so caught up in wanting to watch Sports Center that you don't want to touch the line and go into the bedroom and read Three Little Bears. So touching the line, what they eventually, but and it's worth the wait. That's what's great about coaching, right? Like, it's worth waiting 10 to 15 years, and then guys come back, or you see them, or they're done playing overseas and they transition or whatever it is. And then they start to understand, like, all right, now I know what finishing meant, what, you know, how I carry myself. My handshake is my interview every day, you know, like when you meet people. So all that stuff, like, it's so cool when you see guys, you know, kind of come back and you talk to them, or guys that you coach now are in the coaching themselves, you know, like players that you've coached and now they're coaching. And so you have conversations with them now. And so,
and like, There's a couple of them right now that are in coaching, and I talk to them once every 2 weeks or so. And there's times where they'll just call me and they'll just be dying laughing. Man, like, guess what just happened? And I'm like, yeah, like you see these gray hairs? Like that's because of you, and now you're gonna get those gray hairs too. But I'm telling you, it matters. Now, real quick though, I'm gonna kind of turn the tables around. I'm gonna ask a couple questions, Coach. As coaches, both Alan and Doug. So Alan, obviously you were an assistant coach, but also a head coach. Like, what are some of the qualities and characteristics that you loved the most about when you were a head coach, when your assistant coach did for you? And then how did that make you then have a different perspective when you were an assistant coach? And then Doug, I'm going to hit you with that same thing as an assistant coach. What qualities?
I think I'm just going to create an umbrella. And I think is when guys had there's four different words, but there's two totally different meanings. And sometimes as young assistants, you know, we get caught up in here's what I got. Here's what I got. Here's what I can do. You know, here's what I got. That's four words, but that's not the four words for me that I was looking for. I wanted my assistants to have this umbrella mentality of the other four words. How can I help? And so if guys took that four words, totally different four words, and both have contributing qualities, both sets of four words, but there's a whole different, like you use the word humility to the second set of four words. And the second set of four words to me, because then a guy steps in my office and says, hey man, what do you need? And I'm like, well, you know, and whatever it is, sometimes it'd be nothing. But if it's like, hey, I got to meet with this kid, but hey, if you know, I got to change the meeting, but why don't you go spend some time with him anyway? I'll still go meet with him, but why don't you just take him up to the union and go get a Starbucks and go hang out? And so, but what that created, what it was, is that gave me more, I always had great trust in the guys I had, but what happens is it expanded my willingness to give them more. Because that helped them. If I can help them get better by giving them more, I'm getting the benefit just by default. So I don't have to ask for like, hey, will you do this? Will you do that? By them saying like, how can I help? Then I'm saying, okay, you can, this year you're gonna have the defensive stuff this year. All right, you're gonna do the offense stuff. You're gonna do the personnel. And so now I already know what those guys are doing, and that takes more off my plate where I can actually now coach the team more time, you know, like, yeah, they help me sometimes be an assistant, even though I was a head coach, they helped me be an assistant during practice because they had a drill segment for 15 minutes. Now I could roam around and coach guys.
Yep. You were able to be their assistant during that drill.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I think the four words for me personally was this, that umbrella of how can I help, you know? And so I know that's a long answer for a short question, but I try to encapsulate it just from the standpoint of throwing some examples in there as well. So
that's really good. Doug, what about you, man? You got to follow that up.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've never been on here and somebody flipped the questions on me. So this is a first. I really like this.
Hey, man. You're
like, okay. Doug, 5 years of doing this exact same podcast on your side.
Hey, Doug, it's always fun till the rabbit has the gun. That's what they say.
Now, man. I'm sitting here like, all right, what do I? No, I mean, for me, obviously, I haven't had the head coaching experience yet, but I would say like the opportunities as an assistant that I have had have been really, and since I've been at the Division III level for all of my positions, I've done everything, you know. So I've done the film. I'm the one who's ordering the food. I'm the one who's making sure, like at least in previous positions, I'm the one going out sometimes cleaning the floor early before practice. I'm the one putting them through, you know. And then I also, right after all of this, I have to go recruiting and scouting and cutting up film. So it's like, for me, I feel like being able to find not even necessarily a niche in this, because sometimes, of course, for the higher levels, you need more of a niche because what makes you more unique. But like at Division III, at least in my experience, I've had everything. So I've personally feel not saying no, you know, being able to just, hey, can you do this? Like during the game, my head coach will turn around and say, hey, fill up my water bottle for me. I'm like, okay, you know, like and go over, fill it up. And even if just the little things like that, and like I was saying about the Slipknot, not forgetting the Slipknot before games and making sure the med kits and the water bottles are all filled before the game, I'm the one who does all that stuff. So it's just like finding all the little things, kind of going exactly back to Alan's point, is doing all the little things that ultimately allow your head coach to be able to kind of focus more on basketball rather than having to focus on the logistics of the game, making sure all 15, 16 guys are on the bus in their seats, got all their food, making sure everything's ready there so he could just get on the bus and we hit the road going. Yep. So, I mean, I know I would say characteristics wise is just being, going back to what we ultimately said in the beginning, more of a sponge and just sitting there and what do we need? You know, what do we need? And listening whenever somebody says something, because, you know, I even have this little book whenever my head coach says, hey, we need to start doing this before a game. I sit there and I write it down. And I'm like, all right, this is, so now I have a pregame checklist before we get on the bus. This is what I got to do. Once I get on the bus, this is what I got to do. So writing stuff down, because a lot of times once you get busy and start getting into the season two, things just go in one ear and out the other. You forget about them. So I feel like writing stuff down too always helps, because now it keeps you kind of more organized too.
What's good about what you're saying though, Doug, and you don't know this yet, but it's, the time is coming. Because you've done everything and had a chance to do everything, it's going to be easier for you to find the niche, because whatever your niche becomes, it's going to be something you've done already. You're just going to be doing that more on a daily basis, right? So maybe you go from this to an ops spot. Well, you're the ops guy already, right? So if you go somewhere as an ops guy, like, you're just going to be specializing more on ops stuff, but you're already doing ops stuff. It's just going to be carving your niche in more ops stuff.
And I just told a coach, a junior college coach I was talking to, he's an assistant junior college coach, and he was asking some of those same questions. And I had just exactly what you're saying. It's what I said to him is like, you got to realize that, like, when you're applying for another job, they're going to ask, have you done this? Have you done this? And if the answer is going to be no, you're not a candidate for that job. Having done all those things, you're going to be a candidate for any job there is, because you've already done it. And then eventually you're going to specialize in it temporarily. But if you've already done it before, you have a leg up on all the competition, and the amount of availability, the amount of available jobs are so much more greater because you have done those things already. So you're exactly right, Alan. And Doug, that's a credit for your willingness to just do whatever, like, how can I help?
Yeah, you don't know the advantage of it yet, because you haven't, you know, like 5 years from now, you're going to look back and say, wow, like I was ready for this. Because you're probably not going to be surprised by anything. You know what I mean? So, you know.
We'll see. We'll see.
You'll just have more resources. That's the beauty of it. You'll have the benefit of, you know. It won't be Jack in a Box post game. You'll be ordering, you know, a little bit more nicer, you know, nicer Ooh. Food, and you know, you have a you'll have more resources and access to nicer stuff. So
I love that.
Yeah,
love
the van that. Life. The van life will become charter bus life.
You know? There you go.
haven't had to take a van yet. We actually have these nice personal charters, which.
Oh, there we go. Normal. So you have, yeah, you're yeah. 2/3 of the way
not,
there.
Not like a big yeah, charter. Good. I'm not talking like those high end charters. Yeah, yeah, don't, yeah. But
that's still good living, though, Doug.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of off of that, I mean, does anybody have anything else before we cut to the final segment? I like the mix up for sure. I do like that. We got to start having people equip the question for us now. That's got to be a thing.
Oh, well, I'm gonna do another question for you guys then, since you liked it so much. So I'm an avid reader. Like, I absolutely love reading. And I think that anytime I encounter coaches or anybody, I always ask them, like, what are you reading right now? Because I literally, my Amazon cart, it's just like I have like 3-4 books saved, and anytime it gets to 5, I purchase it. So I purchase those 5. So, like, what books are you either reading right now, or would you say, like, hey, no brainer, like, that Andy Farrell needs to read this, or a suggestion for the Rising Coaches family?
Yeah, I would say two. One's fairly recent, one's older. I just started reading Letters to a Young Athlete by Chris Bosch. And if I were to get another coaching job at some point, I would buy 15 copies, and the first team meeting I would walk in and give one to every player. And so he just, you know, again, I'm just dipping my toes into it, but it's already incredible just because, you know, he's talking about his career, but basically it's like, you know, letters to his younger self in a way, but it's letters to young athletes about just how to, you know, just everything, you know, just from mental toughness to approach to character to it's phenomenal. So again, not done with it, but I just jumped into it and really love it. But that would be a gift to every player on the team if I were to get another head coaching job. Just walk in, break the ice. Hey, fellas, new guy in the room, you know, here you go, read this.
That's great.
The second one would be The Score Takes Care of Itself by Bill Walsh.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So
great book.
Yeah.
And just an unbelievable like mentality.
Yeah, for sure. Because he never it's not even about winning and losing. Right. That's what's great about the book. And sometimes we can get caught up in our profession, like, oh, we need a win. And Bill Walsh would say, well, I think you need to play better first. Instead of like focusing on a win. So, there's a phrase in that book he calls a standard of performance. And so he talks about standards, you know. And so whenever we think about our own programs, you know, what are our standards and what does it look like for each standard to look its best?
Yep.
From the A to Z, on the floor, off the floor, from academics to, you know, a zoo trip, whatever it is. Like, so those would be my two, but so your turn, Doug.
So I actually was just reaching over. I have a little bookshelf right here. It's the one I'm reading right now. It's called Inside Out Coaching by Joe Ehrman.
Oh, yeah. Really good. Really good.
So that's the one I'm currently in. I'm only about 20, 30 pages in. I go about 10 a day. So I literally just started it this week. But
former NFL guy, right?
NFL guy. Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
And he talks about his experiences and how he was able to get through all of those. So I think that's a good one. But the number one, I would say I have two, Urban Meyer's Above the Line and then Leading with the Heart by Coach K. Those are my two big ones, primarily because I'm a huge guy on the psychological side of things. So Urban Meyer's Above the Line Thinking and Above the Line, not even just because he's an Ohio State guy and, you know, being an
Ohio
guy myself.
Yeah, yeah. Come on, man.
No. But like just the message that he talks about and kind of being, you know, you have to have above the line thinking. So like the line is your basic people. And then like, are you thinking above that or below that? Or are you thinking or working harder than the average bear, or are you kind of below it? And it's just the way it goes, what it goes into and everything is it's tremendous, just kind of more of the psychological side of things. So that's why I like it.
I love it. Well, I literally just added Letters to a Young Athlete and Above the Line to my Amazon cart. I'm at four books right now when I added those.
Actually, one more, throw a fifth to make it even. It Takes What It Takes by Trevor Moad. God rest his soul. He was Russell Wilson's mental coach.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, he died of cancer at young age. He's like 49 years old, but phenomenal. I mean, spoke at Alabama, went all over the place, just doing talks to college and pro teams. I think he died like 2 or 3 years ago, but it's purple cover.
Yep.
It's called It Takes What It Takes by Trevor Moad. Boom. High level. Great book.
And Andy, I can even send you, I got a whole list on my phone of all the books that I can save in my stuff. So I can send you a list.
Text me. I would love to see it. Yeah. I would love to see it. But that literally completes my cart. my contribution for this is I'm going to tell you guys what's on my wish list. Let me see.
Charge it to the game. Charge it to Sienna. Tell it it's professional development. There you go.
No doubt. So here's the list I have books to buy. So I've got It Takes What It Takes. I've got Above the Line. I've got Letters to a Young Athlete. And then I've got a book called Flow, The Psychology of Optimal Experience. And then Hidden Potential, The Science of Achieving Greater Things. And that one's by Adam Grant. So there we go. There's five books for all the listeners, and they'll be delivered.
That'll get you through the off season. That'll get you through the off season. That'll get you practice next September.
Well, I'll text you that list over for sure.
Please do. That'd be great, Doug.
Yeah. And what we'll do is we'll cut into our final segment too, which is ultimately three quick hitters.
Yeah.
Just three questions, just kind of all across the board. And then what we'll do is after that, we'll get to our final question, wrap it up, and kind of put the ribbon on top of the awesome gift here. So number one, you know, Andy Farrell, we'll say you're a head coach, okay? Step into that head coaching role. What ways, if maybe like top one, top two ways, do you build your team's culture? Like, is there anything in particular you would want to instill?
Yeah, I think the summertime is so important for forming the team. I think that that would be my number one thing is, I don't think you can do, this is just my opinion, I don't think you can do too much defense because it's the summertime. Like, guys aren't going to get a lot of, you know, you can give them your principles, but like my main thing in the summertime is I want to form the team as quickly as possible. Genuinely and authentically as possible. So I would utilize the summertime to really lay the foundations of building trust, and trust only can happen over the course of time. So I would want to take that time over the summer to really, really form the bonds of the team. So that would be the very first thing as the culture is like, hey, we want to be intentional about forming the bonds of this team from a culture standpoint. Like, I think it's all those qualities and characteristics that like who I am as a man, father, husband. But at the same time, I would want to take some aspects of whatever program I was at. Like, are there certain components, like here at Siena and Dayton, both are Catholic schools. One is Marianist, one is Franciscan, but the word community is really, really important to these schools, which is why Siena has unbelievable community support from the entire city of Albany. That's why Dayton has unbelievable community support, because the city and the school both like embrace one another and they help each other. So I would want to take aspects of whatever program it was and really make sure that we're really ingrained with whatever the school values are. So if it were Siena or Dayton, I would say like somehow involving the community, whether it was the camps we run, whether it's the community service mm-hmm. that we do, but all of those things involve time, right? You want to build those bonds of trust. So I think that those would be the main things that I would try to do is to build the team within the identity of like whatever the university standards are.
Especially having them overcome the hard times, overcome all the workouts. That's what really.
Yeah. Finish with a boot camp last week of the summer, man. Boot camp.
Time. Yeah. When I was in junior college in the month of August, September, October. And if any of the JUCO players that we had, we called it ABC. It was adversity boot camp. And Friday morning at 2 p.m. every Friday for 7 weeks. It was an 8-week program. Every Friday for 7 weeks, we did adversity boot camp. And it was just tough exercise, the most time outside, sometimes inside. But it was just where like pretty much like the coaches became the enemy and they had to like figure out how to do it themselves. But it was simple stuff. But then on the eighth week, I banged on their dorm rooms at 5 o'clock in the morning, and we did it 5 o'clock in the morning on the football field. So it was an 8-week program, and we was like, fellas, we're not doing it 2 o'clock tomorrow. Like, oh, cool, cool. And little did they know, like, the adversity boot camp. I love that stuff because you do
remember adversity. The Titan stuff.
Yeah, no doubt. Through adversity, you just build so many common bonds, shared experiences, and shared adversity.
So the second question would be, when you scout teams, okay, and obviously you have who's the best scorer, what are the offense, defense, primary things, but like, is there any one major thing for majority of the teams, or I should say all the teams that you scout, is there one thing that you're like, this is what I'm really looking for?
Yeah, so when I'm scouting, that's kind of how I cut my teeth in this business. As a student manager, I was always cutting a film, then video coordinator, I was pretty much the video GA, then video coordinator when I was at Clemson. I'm a little over the top when it comes to scouting. Like, I'll watch between 8 and 12 games of every one of my opponents, and I'll break down every offensive and defensive possession with what they're doing, whether it's ball screen, post defense, zone, press, you know, or like what action that's similar to ours do they run. So like every single defensive clip is labeled, and I throw it into a sorter and I run filters, and same thing with offense. So like the thing that I try to pride myself on is like having a better playbook than they would have themselves, because of how organized and detailed I am. So every single time they're in a box line, but they start with pin downs or they go, you know, through cut. Like I know what their through cut playbook is. I know what their, you know, shake ball screen playbook is, where they're, you know, wide pinning afterwards, or they're 45 cutting somebody, or they're restring. Like, I have a better playbook than they have of themselves. So like, I try to pride myself on knowing them like in a very intimate way. But again, like, the only way to do that is it just takes time. You have to watch it. You have to do it. So I pride myself, and like, I guess that would be my thing. Is like, I want to have a better playbook of them than they have of themselves. Or at the end of the year, like, their coach would be like, hey, can you send me over our playbook?
And then the third question is, okay, again, we'll say you're the head coach here. Tie ball game, 45 seconds left. Okay.
I'm fouling up three. I'm fouling up three, just so you know. I'm fouling up three with 7 or less seconds. So if y'all ever play me and I'm the head coach, we are fouling. There's 7 seconds.
Just put the free throw. Put the free throw.
Yeah. Just tell your guy to act like he's shooting no matter what, man. They're coming.
No doubt.
45 seconds left. You're good. Tie ball game. Do you hunt for a 2-for-1? Or do you go for one shot and then hope your defense gets a stop?
Yeah, my team would have been programmed to hunt the 2-for-1. And then we would, by doing that, we also have our game-winning sideline out of bounds, game-winning baseline out of bounds. Like when I was at junior college, we had that. I was very lucky to work for a head coach that called me his co-head coach. And he truly allowed me to have some of those freedoms. And we were in the semifinals of the state tournament, and the other team scored, and literally we pushed the ball down the court. We call a timeout. He hands me the board and we just both look at each other. Our team comes over and there's we're running sideline victory. I'm like, yeah, we're running sideline victory. You guys know we're running sideline victory. So with 45 seconds, our team would already know, hey, we're pushing the ball down the court. We're getting a quick layup off of a step up screen or however, our team was really built. And whatever they're doing, we know we're busting up the court. We're trying to get to the rim. If not, we're just jump stopping, calling timeout right above the free throw line. We're going sideline out of bounds players, warning sideline victory or sideline special.
Yeah. 21 package. I like it.
There it
two
is.
2-for-1. Call it a 21 package.
There it is. Yep. That's great.
And then the final question that we have to kind of wrap it all up is your best piece of advice. Now you've given us a lot, and you've definitely given us, you've answered this question numerous times, but we always got to wrap it up and end it with this. So if you have another one, if not, just want to reiterate your best piece of advice for young rising coaches trying to get their foot in the door. And then how can they accomplish that?
It's going to be biased, but get involved with Rising Coaches. And I say this because through Rising Coaches, you're going to learn a lot, but you're going to develop authentic and genuine relationships. And it's going to be the starting point for where you will be in the future. We will always be a combined entity of the people that we surround ourselves with. So if we can surround ourselves with like-minded individuals, and over the course of time, you're building on genuine, authentic relationships, you're investing in yourself. And if you can invest in yourself and you can take those chances, you're playing the long game. You're playing chess, not checkers. You're setting things up for the future. So getting involved with Rising Coaches, you will learn a lot. And you already said, we have to be lifelong learners. No one has all the right answers, and there's so many different ways of doing this. So the more you can expose yourself to other ideas, and that's what Rising Coaches is. It's a platform for ideas and a platform for sharing a community. And through that community, you're building genuine, authentic relationships. And I'm telling you, those things will take you so, so far in this business, but also in life. So that would be my advice.
Couldn't say it better. Gold. Yeah, gold. No doubt. That's a bat flip. We call that a bat flip, man.
Go ahead.
Take your time getting the first base, man. That's a bat flip.
Well, everybody, Coach Farrell, Al Mage, anybody got any final questions, comments?
Nah, just real quick, Andy. I just personally, me and I can probably speak for Doug, but thank you for teaming up with Rich and this old collaboration to just allow us to be a part of this. We're looking at it the same way you mentioned. I mean, we're trying to serve this platform as best we can. And if we can do whatever to leave it 1% better, I mean, Doug and I talk all the time, how do we get better? Who else can we bring on? How can we get, are there specialists in their field we can bring on? So we're just constantly trying to, take what was already great and just make it a notch greater. But
no doubt.
Thank you for just planting the seeds for this organization, because it's an incredible deal, man. So, and thank you for jumping on with us. We know you're busy, but this was solid gold, man. We appreciate it.
I appreciate it. And thank you for taking the ball and running with this. What y'all have been able to do with the podcast and just the overall identity of what Rising Coaches continues to be. We knew right away, we left it in unbelievable hands that can continue to be the stewards of what this profession in general needs as we continue to impact and influence so many coaches across the country at all different levels. So I appreciate you guys having me on. Thanks for all you guys are doing. I'm massive fans of you guys within these Rising Coaches role, but as people as well. So thank you.
Thank you, man.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Coach Farrell over at Siena College. Everybody, that does it for another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Again, we have Alan Major, Doug Caputo here signing off. Keep working. Keep rising, coaches.
Thanks, fellas.
Prepare your team for success this season with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball, the official number one selling shooting machine in basketball. If you're looking to transform and focus your team's training efforts, all you have to do is mention Rising Coaches or tell them we sent you with the Rising Coaches Podcast. For an additional $300 off, select Dr. Dish shooting machines.
I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.